Whether you're dealing with doze and heat and bucks and rut, the winter blues, the marathon of kidding season in the spring, or show season in the summer, Nate Funk and John Kane of Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, are with you every step of the way, bringing you interviews from various breeders, judges, and others from all over the country. We're always covering the latest ADGA news and covering topics to help make us all better dairy goat breeders. What's up, everyone, and welcome to Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. I'm John, and as always, I'm joined by my co-host, Nate. How's it going, man?
Oh, pretty good. It's a bit warm up here, central New York. We hit 98 today, so it's probably cool for other parts of the country, but...
Well, our guest here is going to laugh at you.
I know. I know. Well, I think I hear her chuckling there, too.
Well... This week, Nate, we welcome Danelle Wolford of Wiedemann Reap, which is her blog and YouTube channel for over 7 years, dedicated to showing the audience how anyone can grow a big garden, small garden, and raise poultry and goats and pigs in the suburbs of Arizona. The channel follows Danelle and husband Kevin, who's the do-it-yourselfer, son Ethan, who I have noticed has kind of picked up the cooking aspect.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just a little bit. And your daughter, Lydia, who is an animal lover just like you, Danelle. And you've recently got bit by the show bug, I guess we can say.
Yeah.
You've
been raising Nigerians for a while now. So everybody, welcome Danelle Wolford to the show.
Thank you.
Thank you for being
here.
You know there's no cure for that show bug, right?
There's no cure. I need my fill. I need to go to all the shows now. Yeah.
And you got bit the worst way because you walked away with a grand champion win.
I did. Yeah, I did. So, it was, and then also best junior doe in show. So that's.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah. How it happened?
I feel like I really didn't deserve it because it's like my first time. People were probably really mad at me, but. I mean, I've been watching people's show for a while, and I just thought y'all were weirdos. I was like, why would somebody do this? You know, but this last year, I ran into a few genetic issues with a couple of my goats, and was kind of bummed because they were my best milkers. And so I started to study more about, you know, the best body structure and everything. And so I found that, like, there are all these tools you can use, you know, like obviously there's milk testing, but then you can use linear appraisal and then people show as well to help, you know, get an eye from a judge and, you know, see if they can, you know, improve their breed and improve their herd. So I was like, I get it now. I get it. You know, like we have a bigger purpose than just milking goats for milk. And, and then once I just I'm good friends with Crystal from Blue Cactus Dairy Goats, and okay. So you know, she has a ton of YouTube videos on showing, and so I just started to dive into her stuff and trying to find other videos on YouTube, and yeah, I was like, okay, I get this now. So the thing is that I did practice a lot with my goats. I feel like I may have looked like a total idiot, and I knew that was probably going to happen. Everybody has to have that first timer experience. But I did, I practiced a lot. The thing that I now realize what we had messed up on is we didn't bring the right hay, the one that they were used to.
Oh.
And so that's like a classic mistake. I was actually listening to your guys' podcast and I was like, that's why they were so terrible. I mean, we did have good hay and we had, like, you know, we had some treats for them then. But we didn't bring, the good alfalfa that they're used to, that they like, so that they could really get satiated. Yeah. So if a goat is hungry, they're not going to act very good at the show. So I think that's why they were so agitated. They were just hungry, also didn't know where they were and stuff. But so I think that just exacerbated the problem. But well, yeah, go ahead.
I wouldn't feel too bad about that. I used to breed Nigerians as well. We recently got out of them. And I'm sure I'm going to get slaughtered for saying this, but it's 9 times out of 10, if it's a junior animal that's acting up, It's either Nubian or Nigerian. And no matter how much you work with them, sometimes it's just whenever they're in the ring, I mean, they just kind of don't want to do what they don't want to do, you know?
Yeah. So yeah.
We worked really hard our first year showing our Nigerians. We had two, I think they were April kids, maybe March kids, that we showed at Dutchess County Fair, our fair that we do the sanctioned show with. And yeah, they were fine practicing at home, but you would never know that we even worked with them or touched them just by the way they were acting in the ring. So, I mean, it's definitely a breed characteristic, but
yeah,
as you work with them and as they age and come into milk and are worked even further in the show ring or outside, they'll definitely become more used to it.
Well, I do think it is a little bit of the animal's experience in the show ring or being shown and just being handled that way. This past weekend, John, I was at a show down in Pennsylvania, and I had this doling that, honestly, when she's by herself in the pen, she's a sharp doling, but put a collar on her, take her in the show ring, she just wants to play, and she's looking at me, and she's trying to jump, and she's spinning around, and not showing. And, you know, I've yet to get past third place with her.
I think it was that second ring, Danelle, that you had the grand champion win, right? It was the last ring of the day for you?
Yeah, it was the last one. So I think, yeah, also they're junior dolings. Like, my senior dolings are really good at being led around, and they're, mm-hmm. you know, they're kind of slower, calmer. So these young ones are pretty crazy. So, but the first time, I mean, I was just trying my best to think of everything that I had done. And of course, it it was also a really hot day. It was like 100 degrees that day. So it was,
yeah, you guys looked miserable.
We were pretty, like, as the day got on, I got looking worse and worse. I was like about to die at the end, but yeah, we went in that second ring, and I thought I almost like grabbed one of the little, you know, kids there and was just like, hey, just show my goat for me. Like, I can't do this. And I can't live like this. But I was like, no, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it. I don't care. So I went out there, and yeah, he just, like, there was a lineup of maybe 20, which is a lot to me. I don't know how many.
That's a big class.
And he gave first place. At first I thought he was like excluding me because he's like, get over there. And I was like, oh dang. And even Crystal was like, did he tell you to leave? And I was like, no, I think he told me I got first place. And I did. I was so excited. And then we got, you know, grand champion, which was so nice. And then the very last best in show was so cool that he and this was actually interesting because this is a doe that I had kind of homebred. So like, I bought a couple different, you know, new dolings and a new buckling this year from really great farms, but this was kind of my, oh, maybe I'll try to breed these two and hopefully it works kind of thing. And so that was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, that makes it even that more special. I mean, like you said, people work years to get best in show. I have a cousin that's been showing since she was 12 or 13 in 4-H, and this year she's now 20 or no she's now 32. She just got her first best in show win. I mean it's just, you know, it's the luck of the draw, who comes and all that stuff, and how well your mm-hmm. animal obviously is presented. So that's a really big thing. I just want, like, I know cool. I messaged you and said, hey,
yeah,
congratulations, this is amazing, but I just want to reemphasize, like, that's pretty incredible. But I mean, cool. to kind of pedal back, you've been breeding Nigerians and you started with Nubians for, I'm guessing, more than 7 years. I mean, 7 years ago is when your first video was posted.
Yeah, we started 12 years ago, and it was all just about getting milk, you know, producing milk on our little 1-acre farm here in the city of Phoenix. So I was just, that's all I thought about, just like making cheese, making yogurt, you know, doing that whole thing. So, yeah, we had a couple Nubians at a time. Now we have just one Nubian, and then we got just into Nigerians, and we just love that. It's also, I can have more on our property if I have Nigerians, so kind of would rather go that route.
Well, people that don't know, you live in the suburbs of Arizona. Mm-hmm. I mean, so
yeah.
there, I'm guessing that it's kind of like an HOA situation, because you show shots on your YouTube channel of you know, flying over the property, and you see all the other houses around, and looks like some people have horses or something. But is there like rules on how many animals you can have on your property?
Yeah, so where we live, Arizona's, there's a lot of farmland that's kind of has been zoned, kind of grandfathered in. So if you can find these little pieces of farmland, you'll find a lot of other people that have, you know, like have horses, or like I have a neighbor that's raised, he has more acreage than us, but he's raising 7 steer on his land. So we all just kind of like, alfalfa grows really well here. And so that's harvested, and people just have them on a little bit smaller plots and just, you know, feed them the alfalfa. So we don't necessarily have pastures and pastures of land for our animals to graze on or forage on. But yeah, so for us, there are a few rules, but it's kind of broad. Like, you know, if you can imagine, if my neighbor can have 7 steer, you know, we're okay if we have 7 little miniature goats. You know?
Yeah, like, I'd say so, especially with the manure output for both.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I'm so, in a very similar situation on my property. We're zoned for farming, but you would never know it if you drove into our town. So it's a very, very similar situation. And there's no exceeds either. So you guys started out with your animals 12 years ago. And was the main purpose was just to get milk?
Yeah, pretty much. That's just, that's what I wanted to do, was sort of kind of be sustainable here on our little acre. And so we just did that for a lot of years. And then I got more into, okay, like let's make better choices with breeding, which buck we're going to bring here. 'Cause for a long time, we just rented bucks from farms around here. And then now we've just really gotten into, you know, trying to learn all about body structure and, you know, everything that we want to improve so we can kind of build out our own, you know, our own herd body shape that we like and, you know, the structure we like and stuff. So I'm excited. I definitely plan on kind of settling down and not purchasing other goats around, you know, bringing in different bloodlines. I have enough here now to just sort of flesh out those lines.
Right. Yeah, that's smart. You can start line breeding and getting more consistency. Now you mentioned linear appraisal. Are you guys planning on doing linear appraisal this year if you get it?
Well, I didn't sign up in time. It was like I'd missed it by a day or something. This year I didn't really get it. I'm kind of bummed. But next year I'll have a lot better. They'll be more developed. I think my bucks would score a lot higher than being in their little teenage, you know, kind of.
Yeah, you got that new young guy, so.
Yeah, so they'll be fine.
Yeah, for sure. So we obviously know that your family is very involved with everything that happens on the farm. Are they just as excited to get into showing goats and learning how to breed a better goat, or are they just excited to have babies in the spring or winter for you guys and kind of just deal with the animals on the farm?
You know, it's always been like me having these crazy ideas and my family going, really? Okay, if you really want to. So I think it's still kind of like that. They're just happy to be along for the ride, and they're just like, oh, it's exciting to make different choices on who's breeding when and who's breeding to who. But yeah, mostly it's me heading up the whole thing. I think I can really get him into showing, because it does give you that greater purpose. And like if you have the chance to win something, that's really fun. Even if I didn't win anything at that show, I had such a blast just talking to people and just learning a lot. And then it was just fun. I really enjoyed it. So
yeah, for sure. I mean, shows are, I know Nate and I both enjoy going to shows, not only to show our animals, but also to just talk goat with other people that aren't our family.
Yeah. Yeah.
I was going to say, it's like a lifestyle.
Yeah.
It really is. It's like a family that you're not blood relations to.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's also fun because you get to these shows and you pick up, you know, tricks of the trade, different ways to feed your animals, but also different ways to use the milk. And for that matter, even the byproduct of raising livestock, you know, manure. You know, we've got a pretty decent garden going here that's fertilized with good old fashioned, you know,
goat pellets.
You know, it's fun to, you know, also meet up with people of similar mindset, you know, as far as loving goats.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
yeah, and it's also, it's a bit of a, it's almost like a game, you know, like we're sitting on the sidelines and we're like kind of guessing. I'm like, oh, I think this one's gonna win. You know, we're like trying to guess what's in the mind of that judge and what she's looking at and why she chose that doe and stuff. I wish sometimes the quality of the microphone could be better so we could hear what the judge is saying. I feel like that's the most important part.
Well,
preaching to the choir.
The show committee may not necessarily have any say in the quality of the microphone, the speaker system. I know
it's owned by like the fairgrounds or wherever you may be.
Yeah,
and they just rent it for the day.
And so it's lowest common dollar. Sometimes you get someone who's got a really good sound system. Maybe they have a band, or maybe they DJ or something, and they use that. Now I have a question though. Is there anyone in your family who's a little bit better than someone else in picking out who's going to go first and who's going to go?
Do you mean as far as like who's going to be bred and stuff and like who?
Well, you were saying watching the shows and picking out which one.
Oh yeah. No, we all stink. We're all horrible.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good way to develop your eye, that's for sure.
It is.
Yeah.
We had a previous, a friend of ours, Kurt Schnipke. He's an AdGood judge now and breeder of some really nice Oberhasleys. And that's how he got started, was they would sit and watch the show, his parents and he, and they'd discuss, you know, which one they thought was going to go first and second place them. And, you know, eventually they started finding that he had an eye for it. And I just didn't know if there was one in the family who it was.
Well, they've only been to one show, Nate. You know, it's going to take more than one show to figure it out, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, we were there all day, so we're experts now.
Oh, come on, you are. You're going to be helping the newbies who come in next.
Oh my gosh, it's definitely experience, but it's fun. It's fun to dive into something new and something you don't know a lot about. I think it's good for anybody to do that. It was a little harder because I knew it was going to be all public, and I'm like, okay, do I really want to do this and show everybody? You know, I don't know, just fall on my face in front of everybody. And I thought, well, like, you know, you got to do it sometime. You got to start somewhere. You know, so whatever.
So did you record for that first show?
Yeah, we recorded it. Kevin got some shots of it. I could barely watch it, though, when I went back to edit it because I was so embarrassed. I was like, I was just mortified. I thought, oh, I can't watch this.
I feel the same way when John sends video of me showing, so don't worry about it.
Okay, that makes me feel better.
I'm a good ringside wife and take pictures and stuff for me.
Yeah.
So I want to pedal back to the YouTube channel real quick.
Okay.
You know, I noticed I used to watch a ton of YouTube, you know, especially when I first started with goats. But I noticed that you're one of the few well-established YouTubers that promotes dairy goats. I mean, you see a lot of these, I guess we'll call them homesteading channels,
right?
Like the Justin Rhodes and Homesteady and. You know, all those Joel Salatin.
Yeah.
But you see that they, you know, those Joel Salatin type people operations where they almost scare away viewers from getting into goats and speak on how hard they are to keep.
I find that so fascinating that they always do that. Yeah.
I mean, they say they're really tough to keep. I mean, I know they're not as tough as everybody's making them out to be. I'm sure you know that as well.
Yeah.
So I gotta say, I appreciate the fact that you show not only just dairy goats, but goats in general in a good blight of what Thanks. They are and what they can bring to either a homestead, a farm, or a ranch, or wherever.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of misconceptions about goats, and even homesteaders that have never really owned goats carry them with them, you know, carry those too. They still think that, you know, all goats stink, or all goats, you know, all these little things, like they'll eat everything and they're just menaces. It's almost like that's that narrative that everybody seems to still stand. And I don't blame them, because, you know, I have different, I'm sure, misconceptions about cows. I've never owned a cow, so I'm sure I'm thinking, oh, they're this and they're that, but I've never owned one, so I don't really know for sure. And yeah, I'm always amazed that people are always so quick to dismiss them, because I think they're so great, especially for, I say the beginner homesteader, but I mean, here we are 12 years later, still loving owning goats. So
it's like having a bunch of dogs, really, if you think about it. Yeah, I mean, they're just, really, they're so personable. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, with the, like the Justin Rhodes, and how they, you know, they have the cows and a bunch of chickens, and they don't really get into the care as much. Like, you don't see, mm-hmm. you know, videos on how to keep mastitis away, or, you know, yeah. how to worm your cow, you know, but where you have in the past and still do, you know, this is how I treat for mastitis, or this is how I mm-hmm. worm my goats, and this is why you don't do it on a scheduled basis, and all this. And you really show them. I mean, even you guys tried AI there once or twice, right?
Tell me about your AI experience.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm all about just like new experiences, trying different things, seeing how things work, because that's what you're always doing. You're trying to say, you know, think to yourself, maybe this is a better way. And at the mm-hmm. time, we were renting bucks from a friend's farm who I love, but, you know, we had used her bucks a lot. So I thought, okay, let's get something outside of the area. And yep. so I looked it all up. I found, you know, the semen, and I ordered it and actually shipped it to my vet's office, and my vet stored it for us in their
trial. Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I didn't have to have a tank or anything. And then they charge like $10 a month to store all the 10 straws I got or whatever. So mm-hmm. it was perfect. And I went for it. It's just that it didn't work. So the only thing. I didn't realize what a low success rate it was. And we didn't do it ourselves. We actually had the vet do it, because I wanted to watch, and I wanted to have better success. But yeah, we tried on three different does, four different times. So one of them we did it twice, and yeah, it never took. It was interesting, you know. But I don't know.
Our first year of doing AI, oh my goodness, I can't think of how many straws we used. We used way too much of way too nice of bugs. And we had, I think, like two does take out of nine. And we felt crushed.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, oh. And then we talked to an experienced AI person. They're like, you're at about 25% success rate. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And we're like, what? And, you know, now we find out, you know, you get up to 50% success rate, and that's decent. Yeah. I do know people who have like 75 and 85, but they're the people who are teaching courses on it. And AI is difficult. It's kind of like a roll of the dice.
Yeah, a little bit.
That's why I haven't gotten into it yet.
But at the same time, it's an exciting roll of the dice. It's like, you know, am I going to get this really awesome genetic ready? And, you know, did you get sevens, or did you get like a one and a four?
Yeah, that's what the vet said. I think we were on our third AI, and she was like, oh, yeah, it's only like 40% successful. And we're like, what? Like, get out, leave. Get out of here. Like,
that's like two out of five, okay?
Yeah. I think it's just hard if you're trying to plan breedings, because you've got to wait, what, like 30 days to do that blood test. And so now you're like a little bit behind, and you're, things that you had planned. That's the only hard part about it. Otherwise, I, you know, would have maybe stuck with it longer, but I thought, oh, I don't like how it throws my whole year off.
What we try to do is, if we're going to do AI, is we try it earlier in the fall.
Mm.
so that if the doe doesn't take, she's not being bred in December or January. She's being bred like in October or November.
Yeah.
But well, you guys shoot Danelle for earlier kidding season, yeah. Right?
Yeah, and that's why it's so hard, as we've tried to play around with different ways of doing it, and the best for us is if they deliver throughout the winter, because it's just been getting hotter and hotter here. So I would prefer to start my kiddings in October and then finish up in, you know, January, February. But I like to spread them out just because we like to be able to enjoy the babies more, and we like to dam raise, but also get them really friendly. And that's harder to do if you have like 20 babies running around. So, you know, it's kind of nice to spread out the videos and like just not feel like there's just mayhem, because it's hard as a YouTuber. You have all this pressure to get videos out. And so I'm sure you guys are starting to feel that with your podcast. Like, we got to do it. It doesn't matter if we're sick, we got to do it. And that gets hard to stay consistent.
Not so much. You know? It is hard to stay consistent.
So with breeding, I found that it works better that way, although things don't always go to plan. Right now I'm like, I had it all planned out, but it's not really going to plan. I'm breeding a couple months early. I really wanted to wait until, you know, like end of August maybe, but breeding her a little bit early, I know I'm going to get flack for that because people are going to say, oh, she was just bred, but you know, goats going to heat year round, so I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. I mean, it happens in nature.
Nigerians.
Yeah. So I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. So we've got to change it up a little bit here. Otherwise, they all will be having babies the exact same time, and that's going to be a little crazy for us. So we'll be fine.
Now you other than spreading that out, because we all love babies, and you know, baby goats are kind of what makes winter shorter for some of us in the northern parts. Do you also find that you, in spreading them out, is that also to help you have milk longer through the year?
Yeah, that does help. I mean, we don't have to spread it out that much, but, we used to just do like spring, like we used to have fall babies and spring babies, and we would divide our does and we'd say, okay, you're a fall delivery, you're a spring delivery, but it's been getting warmer here. Our days above 100 degrees in the last few years have expanded by 6 weeks. So like now we're hitting 100 earlier in May. So that means we're hitting this certain temperature in April. It just feels, it's hotter. Either I'm getting older, I'm just less tolerant, or it's really, really is getting hotter. So now I've just like decided, yeah, we're going to stick with the whole winter period.
Yeah.
Just run through that for kidding. Even though it kind of puts them all in different schedules and may make us a little bit late for showing season here, but as far as like udder development and stuff, it'll be fine.
Well, so. I think that judges take that into consideration, and some judges who travel
tell them
when did she freshen? October. Yeah. okay. You know,
yeah.
And I think it's considered.
Yeah, so that's good to know.
With the heat, how do your goats handle with that? I mean, mine right now are laying in front of as many fans as I can have on them.
Really? Well, you have the humidity too, right? So then that makes it a...
Yeah.
The goats do actually great. It's interesting. I'm always worried about them when we get above 115 or so, then that's when I really start to worry. But they really act no different. I go out and check on them multiple times, and they're just out there walking. Or they'll lay in the sun. It's like 118 outside, and they're laying in the sun. I'm just like, well, okay, you know. and they really don't mind it. And I guess, you know, aren't the Nigerian dwarf? Yeah, they're from Africa, right? So so I just think the heat they do fine with. It also is the big benefit is that we have like no worms here, like no worm load in our goats, hardly at all. I don't think I've ever had an issue with that. And I can get away with just giving them some herbs, and I'll do the fecals on them with our vet or with a company, and they're always low, like super low. So we're lucky with that. You never have any kind of like pneumonia or like runny noses. When you guys said that on a podcast, I thought like, what? Like, cause I've never seen that. Yeah. So, yeah.
It's a thing up here in the North, especially with the big temperature swings that we get. I mean, I had a doe succumb to pneumonia this year for the first time, just because of the temperature swings. And of course it was after kidding. So the stress level. The stress with heat, I mean, that's definitely a big thing that your goats are just like, yeah, well, as long as it's not irrigation day, I'm happy.
Yeah, totally. As long as there's not flood irrigation everywhere, they're happy. They really don't complain. We're always shocked by it, but hey.
I was going to say, like, right now we're dealing with 80% humidity.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, sit in the shade insane. And you start sweating. So
sorry, it's my Jenny Craig for the year. It's fine.
Yeah, you sweat it all off. Yeah. Man.
Well, we're going to go from being the two fat guys to the podcast to like the two skinny guys.
Until wintertime. And then it'll come right back.
And then you got to bolt. Yeah, totally.
It'll be like Tim Allen in the Santa Claus.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know if you know this, but National Convention is in your area this year.
It is, and I'm going. You signed up. Yes, I'm going. They're doing it in Tucson, I think, and yes. Which is like only 2 hours away from me. And so, yeah, I hate to travel, so I'm like, I'm on board with that. Like, I will go 2 hours away. So, I signed up. I'm there the whole week, so I hope it'll be interesting enough to keep my attention. Like I think I called Crystal and I was like, people really go to this thing for a whole week? She's like, oh yeah. It's like, okay.
Oh, and it is networking. It is.
Oh, cool.
And for example, the spotlight sale there, which is at the end of the week.
That's what I'm most excited about to watch on
Saturday night. They extended the application deadline for spotlight sale animals.
Good news for the week.
Wow. I don't know if mine would ever qualify for that yet, but that's gonna be really fun to watch.
It is. I haven't gone to one personally, but I remember 2 years ago now watching the spotlight sale and knowing that Nate is bidding on a particular buck there. And you're just like, oh, come on, man. Nobody else bid. And then somebody else bids. And you're like, oh, man, is he going to get it? And it's just, it's cool. It's really cool. And it's a fun atmosphere. I don't know what it's going to look like this year as far as convention goes with all of the COVID rules. I know ADGA just allowed spectators at National Show this year.
I did just see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was today. Huge.
That's cool. Yeah.
Well, I know that it's a beautiful resort that the convention is going to be at this year.
Yeah.
The El Conquistador, Tucson.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to be one of the more favorite convention locations.
Cool.
So, yeah, you go. You know, we're going to hope to see video.
Uh-oh. Yeah. I think I will. I'll definitely film whatever I can. I always feel kind of dumb when I'm out and about, like I'm holding up a camera. I don't want people to think that
I was going to ask that.
Like, yeah, I never want people to think that I'm like, I don't know, really happy to see myself on camera and like it's all about me. Because we're so sick of our faces. We're like, there's that ugly mug again. Like we're so sick of it. We're always like, there she is again, just talking away. Like we get so sick of ourselves.
You guys are eating dinner in separate rooms because you're like, I'm tired of editing you. Go away.
Yeah, I'm just like sick of seeing ourselves. But I do love to show like things that we're doing. So that would be fun to show for sure.
We have talked about doing a podcast at a show, but it's busy as all get out, especially
when
like I have now three breeds, Nate's got one, so it's kind of hard. But then it's also like, well, is anybody going to want to like sit with us and talk? I don't know. So there's always like that self thought of like, how are people going to take it?
Yeah, totally. Like, do people think that I think I'm a hot shot and like I'm so. I don't want people to think that I'm just a regular person like you guys, just trying to do my best here. You guys are both going then?
No,
I'm not going to convention. No,
oh, okay.
No, we're being slackers and we're staying in the hot and humid Northeast.
Okay, yeah.
And we're watching virtually, and we'll yell at the computer screen as spotlight sales going on. My hands will be tied behind my back, and I won't be allowed to bid.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Last time convention... I bid.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, convention, not this year, obviously, but next year is in Syracuse, New York, which is near Nate and a couple, 4-hour drive for me. So we'll be at that one, but you'll probably not want to attend because, again, that's like a it's a haul going to the other side of the country.
You should go to Syracuse.
Oh, you talk, did you say that I should go to Syracuse?
Yeah.
Well, I see, I have a hard time traveling. I do really bad on planes. I'm trying to fix. I have this heart issue where I pass out on planes. So I like.
Oh yeah,
that would be a problem. Stinks. That would be a minor like, problem. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. So I don't know. I've thought about just taking the drugs and going. But yeah, eventually I would love to. That would be very, very cool to go. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's beautiful up there.
Now, do you guys plan to go to national shows as an exhibitor someday? Or are you just going to go as spectators and watch and, you know, stick to the local shows until you guys break, you know, break even and
yeah.
You're ready?
I don't know. I'm kind of waiting to see if they bring a national show to this side of the U.S. so we don't
They're
have to travel.
To.
Are they? Because, yeah, because I saw that it said like Central West or Southwest or something mm-hmm. in like 2024, 25. So I was thinking that would be a great goal to shoot for, like, you know, build out my herd, show goats in the meantime, and then like plan on going to nationals then, you know, so we'll see. But I just, my question for you guys is like, how do people travel so far with goats? I cannot imagine that.
Yeah.
A horrible thing to tell you, Danelle, is that you're asking the wrong two guys. See, in the Northeast, we have so many shows
mm-hmm.
that to get to a show on any given weekend, you have to travel like 2.5 hours tops.
Maybe. Wow.
Well, sometimes they're 4 to 6 hours, depending on the
but
show.
That's
but yeah,
still,
yeah.
That's
nothing.
Right. Meanwhile, a friend of ours up in Idaho, actually a bunch of friends of ours from the West, I'm just going to say West. You know, routinely travel 6, 8, 12 hours to a show.
Wow.
Usually, though, what they plan is they plan overnight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, either to show up the night before and settle in and show the next day, or they pick locations along the route to
mm-hmm.
the show
mm-hmm.
and do overnights that way. A few of them will simply drive straight through. They'll change drivers.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We have a friend that's traveling for nationals from Idaho to Louisville
a couple
this year. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, because I Googled it. It was like 20 hours for me. And I was like, how is that possible? How did people do
that? It was going to be 14 for us. So, but you learn how to do overnight on the road,
mm-hmm.
Whether you continue traveling or whether you find places to stay. Some people figure out where the local county fair locations are, you know, the fairgrounds
mm-hmm.
are.
Yeah, I did hear that. I think that was on your podcast where you guys were sharing tips like
yeah.
that. And I was like, yeah, that's
it was fun. Us or Go Gap, one of the two.
It might have been, yeah, I can't remember, yeah. but yeah, it was interesting.
But you some people will do that. Others will find where the state parks are
mm-hmm.
and pull into state parks. Others will coordinate, you know, it is the age of the internet. And they'll coordinate with their friends that they know on Facebook and or whatever, and
mm-hmm.
you know, stay at their farm
yeah.
Yeah.
overnight.
Yeah, that seems like a good option.
Long story short, is go people are crazy. I don't know if you
yeah.
found that out yet.
Yeah,
but
we're
yeah.
a fun
we're a little
crazy,
bit crazy.
Though. See, I grew up with goats.
That's crazy. Yeah, that's
yeah, see,
I mean
that
that's
crazy.
Dedication.
you know, and we are a special kind of crazy, but it's funny because it's when trouble happens and you need help, it comes out of the woodwork, and sometimes it's people you wouldn't expect who
oh yeah there's been
help.
A There's been a couple times this year where people were on their way to shows and they got a flat tire and they were on Facebook saying, "Hey, is anybody nearby?" And goat people come up and they're like, "All right, let's change it. Let's go."
Yeah.
or they have a problem with their truck. Yeah. And they have a problem with their truck and they're like, "Hey, I'll come with my truck and take your trailer to the show and take your truck to the shop."
Like in 2019, the exhibitor was on their way up from, I believe, New Jersey or Maryland, and his truck caught fire.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Burned up on the interstate. And someone took their truck down, and they managed to get the trailer unhooked somehow, I guess. And they brought the goats all the way up to the show, and then took him home.
Oh, my gosh.
But, you know, there's crazy things like that. I remember in, I believe it was 1988, we went to Harrisburg. And we got about, 40 miles outside of Harrisburg. And we had the goats in the back of the truck. We had a camper hooked to the truck. And we were going up a hill, and it threw a rod.
Wow.
And someone came with their trailer and unloaded all the goats into the trailer, took them down to Harrisburg. When the Nationals was over, our herd got spread out amongst other. As a group, we stick together. Even sometimes we don't agree with each other, on topics. We tend to stick together. And it's nice.
So I want to ask one question, and I know you have some questions for us, Danelle.
Mm-hmm.
So this is just something that kind of came to my mind. I mean, I know you guys have quite a bit of exposure on YouTube and your blog.
Mm-hmm.
And I know I have just a tiny little bit with my Facebook page and this. And I've gotten messages from anti-agriculture industry people.
Mm-hmm.
I was just curious, do you get any of that kind of hate from the PETA people, or not even PETA, just, you know, people that are anti-agriculture?
Yes, constantly. It's so frustrating. I think it's just, I think sometimes it's hard because, definitely have those people that will show up at least like on our channel, and we'll see that they're like a hardcore vegan or whatever, and they mm-hmm. clicked on a how we butcher a chicken video specifically to leave some kind of comment. So I'm like, okay, like those are your beliefs, that's cool, you're spending your time doing that, like have fun, you know, like whatever. But then there's the people that follow us, and it's I think it's hard. I have so much to say about this topic. I think it's hard.
It's okay. Because, this is the spot.
Yeah. Kids, I think that we were raised with a lot of cartoons and videos that anthropomorphize animals, like give these human characteristics to them. And I've done it too. Like I think that my goat is mad or my goat is sad or whatever. But I don't know if it's just this new generation coming up. I hate to be that old person that's like, oh, those kids these days, you know. But I do think that there is something where, especially people that haven't been raised on a farm at all, that they have this idea of how an animal should be treated. Like, for example, you see a lot of people say, who see a cute dog, this dog deserves everything in the world, or, you know, and it's super funny to say that, or it's super funny to be like, oh, I work all day so my dog can, you know, have the best life. But what you'll notice is that people that own these dogs are the worst behaved dogs ever.
Yep.
And that's interesting because, like, you can still love an animal and care for an animal, but have boundaries and have rules. Like with our training with our new dog is, you know, we don't let her get away with stuff, because if we did, she would be the worst dog ever.
Oh, and you can't let them. You have to train them. You have to.
Yeah.
You know, you ever watch these guys with oxen?
Yeah.
You know, there's these 1,500, 2,000-pound animals who could kill you.
Yeah.
And yet, generally speaking, when you watch them work with the oxen, those animals are so well-behaved. They're generally so gentle.
Yeah, totally. It's like with dogs, it's like there's funny videos about how, like, oh, I was just eating my picnic and the dog came up and, you know, ate the whole pizza, and you're like, Yeah, my dog would never even think of doing that. My dog would go kill himself before he would do that. There's no way.
Steal it off the table.
My dog would never. It's just, so I feel like with animals, sometimes people are looking for a way to point out how an animal is not treated the way that they think that an animal should be treated. And well, we've gotten some of that. Like people will message us and be really mad that they feel like that this goat is really sad. And I'm like, oh, yikes. Like you've got to
really stealing the milk from this animal.
Yeah.
Now, how do you handle that though?
And I just try to maybe explain it. But a lot of times we just kind of get rid of those comments because I fully believe in being able to cultivate a certain kind of community that I want to. And mm-hmm. I don't like the idea of people feeling like just because there's a comment entry for them that they get to say whatever they want and that they have the freedom to be able to leave it public. And I just think that we want to create a community where we're positive and we're happy and, you know, we focus on the fun and enjoyable parts of life and not on all the things that you can nitpick. Because honestly, when you I think a comedian once said, like, if you could choose to live your life without being in the public eye, do that. And that's so true. Like, I feel that because it is really hard to show things that you're doing in your life, even though we don't show every part of our lives because we're not all about that side. We don't show like how we're feeling that day or us in our bedrooms. We don't show that. We show the farm life. Right. But even with that, any little choice we get gets nitpicked. And I'm just like, this is not fun. You know, it's not fun that every little choice that you make is, and I can feel one coming up sort of occupying my mind today because we're choosing to breed this doe a couple months earlier than we normally would. She delivered beginning of February, but it's a little bit early. But we've also gone years before where we've bred her late, way late, where we didn't breed her, you know, she didn't deliver every month right in February. Some months she delivered way later. So we gave her a much bigger break than we normally would have, you know.
Right.
And it just depends on a lot of different things, like how healthy the goat is and how fast the goat bounces
yes,
back.
Exactly.
You can totally tell the difference between a goat that you're like, oh, they need a little more time. And one goat, you're like, boom, man, they had their baby and they're ready to go again. And in nature, it could be argued that there ain't no schedule in nature, you know, when the goat's in heat, the goat gets bred. But I can feel that, like, I know that that's going to be a big issue for people and stuff. And I think, we just honestly, we nip it in the bud right away. Like if you're here to complain, then we really don't want you. Like go complain somewhere else. And I'm okay losing followers and losing people. If they really don't like us, like I'm not going to try to convince you to like us. Like then maybe you shouldn't follow us. Maybe you should go find somebody that, you know, affirms your beliefs that you think that, you know, goats should be given a feeding tube and put in a prosthetic wheelchair until they die. Cause that's not my belief, but if that's yours, go find it. I'm sure it's out there. It's the internet. There's everything out there for you to affirm that belief. But so we really just kind of nip it in the bud. We'll either, we don't necessarily block people as much as we hide people. We don't give people the ability to comment anymore. If you're going to leave a negative comment, then you cannot comment anymore. And that's what I love about YouTube. It gives you that opportunity to do that. And we've seen other YouTubers and their comment sections just snowball into just this ridiculously hate-filled section of just people that just kicking you while you're down. And I'm just that's not going to happen here.
And when you're doing these videos and you're trying to teach us about, you know, how you process the chicken or how you, you know, handle the goat for doing hooves or what you do with the milk, you're trying to teach like anything in school. You know if you do public school, our kids don't, but still, if you're trying to teach someone how to do something, you don't need someone else saying oh, you're being bad. You know, you don't need someone detracting from that educational opportunity you're trying to give. And I have perfect, I see that. And, you know, I grew up with that kind of thing where we were often taught that if someone starts, you know, spewing hate rather than asking questions, I'll answer questions about why I do things.
Yeah, totally.
You know, But if you start telling me I'm a bad person for doing it,
mm-hmm.
I guess our discussion is over.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. And, you know, the longer I've been in the homesteading world and blogging world, I've really learned even myself to be less judgmental of other owners, you know, because it's really easy to fall into like, oh, they do this, they feed their animal this way, or they, but really there's a lot of ways to do a lot of different things with animals. There's a surprising amount of ways to feed goats and different, some people say no alfalfa with bucks at all. And some people say I've been doing it. I met this 80-year-old woman at the goat show, has been doing it for 50 years. Never once has she had urinary calculi from it. So it's just, it's okay. Let people do different things, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's definitely, especially with dairy goats or even, I'm sure, meat goats, but there's a million ways to skin a cat when it comes to having a healthy, productive herd. There's a million ways to ruin your goats, but there's also
and we've all made mistakes. Well, like everybody makes mistakes. It's okay. Oh, yeah, like you know, like dang.
Well, but I don't think you're gonna have to see too much lash back as far as breeding her 2 or 3 months early from what earlier from what you were going to.
But she,
I know what doe you're talking about, and she's in good shape. She's a nice, she's happy, fat, sassy doe.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
This, you know, like, I don't know the doe, personally, but...
Oh, you never met?
No, I've never met her. She and I have never gone into children, gone for the walk with me. You know, and, but if she's in good rig, she's old enough, she's of size, and you've, you know, she's freshened before, yeah, why not? You know, if their lactation is... She's able to go through her lactation or finish her lactation? You know, is she going to milk? Is she going to milk through?
Oh, well, this year, yeah, she'll definitely milk through, but we're not milk testing this year, so I'm going to probably kind of let the does dry up a little bit early anyway and kind of just let them, you know, build up a little more nutritional reserves before we go. Because next year, we're kind of going at it. We're doing the milk testing, linear appraisal, showing, and all that. So I'm kind of, you know, gearing them up for that next round.
You know, I would just, you know, let those who poo-poo you for doing it, let them do it. You've got a goal. You've got a reason for doing it. You've got an objective. It's not like you're doing it willy-nilly. I don't think you're going to get too much slack from the breeders who have experience, people who don't know
as
much, possibly, but...
There's just a million things you can nitpick. So, in the end, it's like, choose something else. I got a lot of things for you to pick, you know?
Like, now, today on Instagram, you asked your audience mm-hmm. if they had any questions as you were coming on the show today.
Yes.
Did you have any questions for us?
Yes. Okay. I have like a list of like 6 questions. So hopefully we can get through these. So one of them is, so people that bring 20, 30 goats to a show, how do you all train that many goats to walk so well and be set up? Is it more of a, well, if they're milking does, if they're senior does, they're going to just do better. So they know they're going to be led well. Or are they out there working with every single one all the way up to show?
John, shall I take it?
Yeah, you can take it, Nate. Yeah, sure.
So we have a show string about 20 some does, or we've had about that. This year we're down to about, I think we're taking about that to progressive. Honestly, my children are a huge help.
Okay.
Well, what happened?
Have more kids. Okay, check.
Well, what we do is, what we do is they take when they're babies, and they'll get a collar, because that's each animal gets a different collar, and that's how we tell them apart. And we will just start teaching them to walk with the collar when they're young.
So do you think walking with them is probably the most important? Because if they're walking well, they'll probably be set up well.
They will be used to being led. And for kid goats, I think going into the show ring and having that collar and being walking around the shelving.
Okay.
That's where the terror starts for them.
Yes.
And once they're scared,
they're gonna
throw a fit, and then you trying to restrain them or make them do this, make them do that, just makes it worse.
Yeah.
The other thing is, once the kid goats are starting to walk with the collar well, then we'll practice setting them up.
Okay. So you kind of accomplish the walking first. Okay.
Right. We teach them to walk first. And then
walk before you run.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Or walk before you set up. Yeah. And so once they've learned to walk with a collar, then we'll teach them to set up and do that. And then as they get older, you know, we'll teach them to set, you know, be set up in show position and hold it.
Okay.
You know, to stay that way. Such that you get these older does who are 4 or 5 years old. They've been in the show ring 50 times. You set them up, you know, get them to that point where you want them, and you're done. And you hold them there for about five, 10 minutes.
So a lot of people are probably more working on the ones they've never brought to show, like the young ones, than they are like the senior ones, unless it's like a really good senior one that you're like, I really want you to do well.
Yeah. It's kind of like husbandry with dairy goats. There's a million ways to skin a cat. I mean, I have this year, I'll be honest, I didn't take the time to show my kids at home, you know, practice with them. Mm-hmm. It was trial by fire. I brought them to the show and let's go. Good luck, everybody. Yeah. And it depends on the animal. You know, it worked out for mine.
Yeah.
But it depends on the animal, really, and how much time you want to. If you have the time to do it, I mean, you have two kids at home. You can bribe them, I'm sure, to practice.
Yeah, and we don't have that many goats. I was thinking of taking my goats and walking them down the street, because then that's a new place, you know, like, this is a new surrounding. And that will hopefully kind of get them out of the being afraid to go around. Yeah, so that'd make a good video.
Walking them by the collar, though, because that's how you're showing them.
Oh, really? Okay. Because I was thinking, like, first just get them leash trained, and then, like, but then having it under their, like, having that collar under the neck would make it harder for them, you're saying? So make sure to practice that.
That's more uncomfortable. At some point, practice it. But, you know, when my kids play with them, and we play, you know, a friend of ours calls it play goat.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, for us, it's like a minute or two.
Yeah, where they just
and then as the eight does get older, it might be up to 5 minutes that we're playing goat with each one.
Okay,
it's not playing like goat is just practice.
It's just practice.
Okay,
and it's not a long, like, it's not a half hour or 45 minute ordeal. It's like, you know, you got off the milking stand. The other dough's not quite done.
Okay.
I'll grab you. I'll set you up and see how you look.
Okay.
And then we're done. There you go. Here's our cookie.
Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
Another one I had was, do you guys have any kind of like feeding schedule or something that you do to try to get like a baby up to weight? So that you can, like, or, you know, just kind of get them to fill out so that you can breed them. And so they deliver on that first year. Because what I've always done is, just because we've been more relaxed and never needed to really worry about it, we've had our goats really breed on, like, we breed them when they're like a year and a half old. And then they like have their first kidding at like year two. But I know a lot of people, you know, really want to breed at around, you know, seven, eight months, so that they can deliver around their year mark.
Right.
So anyway, I know the thing is all about getting them to size, getting them up to weight, and also, you know, getting them developed. So do you have any kind of protocol you guys do for that?
Yeah. So this year was my first year of breeding kids, March kids in late October.
Okay.
To kid in March. So they were a year old.
Right.
When they kid. What I did was, we bottle feed, so I kept them on the bottle longer.
Okay, that probably helps.
You guys dam raise, so if they're on the dam for an extended period of time, not just like 8 weeks before they kick them off. I know sometimes they do. then
that can kind of help.
Yeah, keeping them on the bottle longer for me helped. Also, getting them on grain. I feed my kids medicated meat goat grower.
Okay.
Pellets. Yeah. Uh-huh. That gets them to fill out a little bit. And also for me in the Northeast, because we're wet,
yeah.
I also make sure I'm on top of their coccidia prevention, because that's the fastest way that a kid's yeah. going to get stunted and not grow.
Right. And then once they get a really bad case of it, they're kind of behind. So,
yep. Right.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. It's easy for a kid to get knocked behind. I mean, I had a kid, she broke her leg. Well, she broke the growth plate in her leg this year.
Wow.
And she went a week of just barely touching bottle, enough where I didn't have to tube her, tube feed her, but not where I wanted her to be. And she's still catching up, and she's the same age as two of my other does, and they're way okay. better than her.
Okay.
So they're easy to throw off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, you know, John really touched on it. Really, we found that if we can, at our farm, we quite frankly we bottle feed everything, and
okay.
for us the med, you know, we aim for 20 to 24 weeks of nursing. Now mind you, by the time they're about 18 weeks, they're getting it once a day, but they're still getting, you know, tonight, you know, here,
yeah,
when we're done, I'll be calories. Taking milk out to the, you know, 20 week old kids that they're evening feeding. And okay. like John, we do a medicated meat goat grower. The medicated part, quite frankly, the one we use has ammonia chloride.
Which right.
helps buck kids with yeah. urinary calculi. It also mm-hmm. has BT, which is a coccidia treatment
mm-hmm.
in it as well. Again, in the Northeast, we have to deal with coccidia.
Yeah, definitely.
And then, quite frankly, getting them on hay.
Yeah, that too. Getting the rumens working.
Getting yeah, getting them really eating going. That. What kind of hay are you guys feeding up there?
Now, John and I feed different types of hay. I'm feeding almost 100% grass hay.
Okay.
Because that's what's available.
Okay.
You know, it's, the alfalfa is not really available. The dairy farms around here hold it like gold. Down near John, what do you got?
Well, I do for my does, second cutting or more, third or fourth cutting if I can get it, which this year looks like I'll be able to, orchard grass and Timothy mix.
Okay.
But I'll also get, what I call like rocket fuel hay for my show does. And it's an orchard grass, straight orchard grass mix from out west. But they also have it with alfalfa.
Okay.
And it seems to help them pretty well. I have a couple does that are not the easiest to keepers. So I got to get the good stuff for them or else they just revolt.
Yeah, that's so interesting because they're back, you know, here where I am in the Southwest, everybody feeds their goats almost 100% straight alfalfa.
Mm-hmm. No, that's
just
not
go ahead.
That's not a bad thing.
Yeah, yeah, it's just kind of what's available. I mean, it's also expensive. It's like, you know, $16 a bale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they're like big bales, but still. but we've also tried to give them different grasses, and they don't like it. They don't like it at all. It's probably what they're not used to, but we've tried, and they just, they hate it.
Now, the other thing both John and I have done is we've seeded our pastures.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Give it some variety.
I've gone with some red clover. We've got some white clover there naturally. I've also mm-hmm. done some trefoil, legume.
And, yeah, that's cool.
You know, so yeah. they're getting that as a browse.
Yeah.
And I just want to add while I'm thinking of it. For your Nigerians, ideally, if you want to breed them before they're a year old, you want them at that like 50-pound mark.
Right, right, totally.
So, I think they're good to go.
Yeah, they're doing good so far. I've got two, like, from totally different areas. So I've got one from back east where in New York, where you guys are from. I bought an RZ Acres doling.
Okay, Yep.
Yeah. We know her. We show with her.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, good. Well, yeah. Yep.
She was at the show this past weekend I was at.
Oh, cool. Yeah. So, So yeah, so I have her. So I kind of have different does from different areas, but yeah, they're all gonna. That sounds really similar to what I'm feeding them. So it's nice to get that affirmation on it, because it's very different what people feed.
What I would say is, if you want to try to get a doe who's a year old, you know, a milking yearling, yeah, you've got to work on getting her towards that mature size.
Yeah, totally.
It's not hard to do with Nigerians either, right. So I'm sure they're there.
I think they're growing really well. So I think, I mean, we're still really early. I mean, they still got the whole rest of the summer and fall to fill out. So I think mm-hmm. they'll do good.
Yeah.
But do what works for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got different issues and different advantages depending on different parts of the country. You know, I would love it to think that, you know, I could only get alfalfa hay and, you know, but, you know, there are the people who would die to have my second and third cutting grass. Yeah,
totally.
You know, so in fact, I never come home with extra hay after a show.
Yeah.
So,
oh, that's funny. Oh my god.
But did we answer your question?
Yeah, totally, totally. So yeah. I have another one.
Yes.
Somebody was asking, and I was curious about this too. Do people hire someone to show their goats?
Okay, so I saw this recently.
Tell us the deets. Oh, I can hear this is a juicy one.
So the answer is yes and no.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You can hire someone to show your goats. Back in the 90s and early 2000s, I would hire myself out to show goats. But I rarely actually got paid cash. I usually got paid like pounds of $50 cheese.
Oh, okay.
The cheese man.
Oh, I love Barb Reed.
All right.
Made excellent cheese. Anyway, little rainbow togs. Anyway, but so yes, you can.
Okay.
But my thought is, if you're going to do that, you want to have, if you're going to hire someone to show your goats, you want like proof that they've done well in the showing a variety of types of animals.
Mm-hmm.
So
would it be kind of a detriment because the goat doesn't know that that owner, and so, you know,
that
person.
It depends on how well the animal.
Well, I have a perfect example for that question.
Okay.
So this year, my wife and I had our baby, Alice. Mm-hmm. So Tierney's kind of taken a step back from the goats, my wife Tierney. So this year we went to a doe show up in Altamont, New York, and we brought all of our does, and I'm one of the breeds, recorded grades. My aged doe got first, and her daughter, who's a year old, first freshener, got first in her class as well. Well, I'm only one person, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I hold my old doe Gem, and sitting there, and I look, and here comes Tierney, and she's going to grab the doe Minerva that went first. And
mm-hmm.
She hasn't touched Minerva since she was a kid. So Minerva was a brat.
Oh, and
wow. Didn't want to show, you know, throwing her head back, not setting her feet.
Yeah.
Where with me, she's perfect angel most of the time. And really sets up nicely. So it really just kind of depends on the animal. I have does like my doe Gem, where if my wife would have grabbed her, she wouldn't have cared one bit.
Okay.
Well, it also depends on the animal too.
That's what I said.
Get somebody's showmanship animal. And it's not going to matter who. They're so well, so heavily trained that the doe is going to practically set herself up anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that. Yes, you can hire people. You can pay someone to show your animals. I'm going to say there's a but here. You don't have to.
Yeah.
I can. We were down in Troy, PA this past weekend. And there were some beautiful animals being shown there. RZ Acres were there showing. You know, we had, you know, just a lot of animals.
Mm-hmm.
And people, when somebody needed to take an animal in the show ring, in general, they just turned and said, can somebody take her in for me?
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, there were animals that were shown by some pretty impressive showmen. You know,
mm-hmm.
You know, some people who I know have shown at the national level just simply grabbed an animal and took her in and showed them and showed them quite well. So most I would say if you're looking for someone to help you show your animals, look around, see if you can find an experienced showman who's willing to help you and are willing to take them in.
Okay. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. So I have another question about, now can bucks have scurs and be shown? Cause I know they're supposed to be like dehorned or disbudded, but
yeah,
they can have a scur.
I have a buck, an Oberhasli buck that, has two scurs. They're not huge, you know, they're probably only 3 or 4 inches long, but they're there.
Would you even take it to like nationals with a scur? I mean, we're talking about,
but well, bucks don't show at nationals.
Right, oh. But if it's a big local show,
interesting.
Yeah, if it's a big local show that there's a lot of bucks there, you can show bucks with scurs.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So
people
interesting.
Hear us talk about the elk
and another hunt. Question was: do they have to be ADGA sanctioned shows? Are there benefits to like maybe not doing one? I would always think that you should, but I don't know.
So, ADGA is a pedigree. Registry. So, if your animal wins a championship over 10 or more animals, milking animals, say you're a milker, because it also goes for juniors in junior sanctioned shows, but that's going to get messy. So we'll just keep it simple with milkers. If your milker goes champion over 10 or more animals, and at least 8 of those were in milk, she earns what's considered an unrestricted milking leg. If she earns 3 of those, or she earns 3 legs under 2 or more judges, she earns a permanent championship title, which gets put onto her paper. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
If she's got a milk star, produced a certain amount of milk for her age class at a certain given time, when she earns that permanent championship title, she becomes a GCH suffix in front of her name. These things help, quite mm-hmm. frankly, in selling kids. Okay. There's also benefits as far as a permanent champion doesn't have to show in the age class at many shows. You know, so the...
Yeah.
You know, they can be shown in a special class called Champion Challenge, where they'll come in and they will show against the champion of the day, but not against the other animals.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Otherwise, a sanctioned show, it's sanctioned. It's kind of certified of sorts.
Mm-hmm.
John?
Yeah. So sanctioned shows are... most of the top breeders will go to these ATGA sanctioned shows. So you'll have that extra heaviness to it, right? Extra weight. Where if you go to like a fair that's not sanctioned, you're going to have probably not the best pedigreed or best looking animals to judge how your animals do against them, right? Okay. You want to have good animals there to be able to see how you line up against other breeders. So you can see if your breeding choices are paying off or not.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
All right. So another question is, a lot of people had, somebody had this question and I thought, well, that's how I feel too. But we've sort of answered it. They said, is it embarrassing when something goes wrong or are the judges really harsh? And I was like, yeah, I don't think the judges are harsh, but yeah, I was definitely embarrassed a little bit. But I mean, what other thing that's new are you not going to be embarrassed about? Like, if I were to go out and be like, I want to, you know, start doing jujitsu, I'm going to be pretty embarrassed in those first few months or year of doing it. So it's like, if in anything else that you start out, I would think, yeah, sure, there's going to be things you might mess up on. But I think the other goat owners were really nice. That was what I was really grateful for.
Yeah. Most of the time, the judges will support you as a newer person and kind of give you a little bit more reasons. If they haven't seen you before, it seems like judges really will focus in and say, hey, this is why you're dough placed, you know, fourth over third or over fifth. So the goat community is pretty cool where, yeah, we're all going to get embarrassed at some point, but we're here for each other. I mean, one of my first shows, I had a judge ask me if my goats were backyard goats, pets.
No.
It's just one judge,
you know, you might get a judge that's going to be a little harsher and you're just going to have to deal with it, you know?
Yeah, you might. Yeah, everybody's different.
Every judge is a little bit different. And, you know, at one point in time, we've all been embarrassed in the show ring for whatever reason. You know, goodness, I had a show where a buck show and I'm standing there showing the buck and he's just spraying the back of my pants leg. I ended up, it was a cold May afternoon.
Oh, so he warmed you up at least.
50 degrees in the evening when we were driving home with the windows rolled down because it smelled of eau de buck. But at the same time, you know, the judge saw and laughed. Okay. Some judges will be harsh. Mm-hmm. And those judges are just the way, that's how they are. Just look, they're people.
But that's why it's good to have a lot of different judges. I think that it's important that we have so much diversity in the judges, that they live in different areas and they've had different experiences. And yeah, I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of like all of the different tools to gauge your animals, you know, DHIR, you know, milk test, linear appraisal, taking them to shows.
Yeah.
Same thing with judges. You want all that diversity so you can see where your animals hold up. And it's easy to go barn blind when you're breeding goats and you think, oh, this one's the best.
Right.
And then it turns out, you know, it's got a lazy hip.
Yeah.
And it limps a little bit, but you never noticed it. Yeah. So it depends. But
and
it's definitely a good
time,
tool.
We were all about personality because, you know, we're out there dealing with them every day. So we're like, this one's the easiest one to deal with. And so we're like, yeah, we like you. We're going to keep breeding you. But now we're like, and that kind of goes into my next question. People want to know, what are the main things to look for, like in the body structure or breed for? And I'm like, wow, that's a loaded question because it really does depend a little bit on what you have and what you want to improve. Like for example, this new little buckling that I got, we call him Napoleon, but he's from Dre Hook Farms. I think I say that wrong. I think it's Dre Hook.
Dre Hook.
And it's like so long. He's got this length and his dam is so wide. So I'm really excited because we've got a couple little short stubby goats that we would like to improve upon. So I guess that's my answer to it, but what would your guys' answer to be to that?
Go ahead, Nate. I'll let you do the long-winded part.
Oh, gee, thanks. So I think it really depends on what you're looking for. You know, you've pointed it out. You've got these short, stubby goats. You want to make them longer and wider. And, you know, I think within each breed, there are traits that you want to improve upon. You know, there are traits that each breed has that they're notorious for. Oberhasleys, for example, are usually notorious for being hocky and narrow bodied and shallow. But I can tell you right now, that's one of the things that a number of the breeders in the country are targeting.
Improve. Okay.
Now,
yeah.
Interestingly, to go back a little bit to your previous question, I do know some of those very same breeders are breeding for personality. If the animal is a curmudgeon or, you know, if they can't be dealt with.
Yeah.
Goodbye.
Right.
You know, I have heard of people who've said he's beautiful, but I don't feel safe with him. You know, I can't go in the pen with him. I've got two bucks here who are two.
And then how do you show a goat like babies. That? Yeah.
Most people don't show a goat like
okay.
that.
Okay.
No, no. If you have an animal like that, you don't show them. Okay. And that it's difficult if you're in the show community of dairy goats.
Yeah.
You know? You know, some people do select for personality, or at least mm-hmm. it influences their decision on keeping and selling. If you have two animals, one is sweet as honey and the other one is, mm-hmm. is hitting all the other animals in the barn.
Right.
Which, and they're both similar quality. Which one are you going to keep?
Yeah, you know? Totally.
You know, as far as selecting, you know, we all want that animal with a beautiful fore udder, high and wide rear udder with a nice arch. We want great teat placement, you know, plumb pointing straight down.
Yeah.
You know, not out to the sides against the leg. We want width in the, we want a nice wide and long and level rump. We want yeah. a top line that's in nice and straight and long with a prominent withers. We want a brisket that is prominent with shoulders tight against the chest wall. We want a long, lean, feminine neck. We want nice pliability of skin, good bone pattern. We want a good, strong set of feet and legs, width between the hocks. We want all of this. We want depth of body. That's kind of a unicorn of sorts.
Yeah,
to get all well, that
that's,
in one
that's
animal.
Like the ultimate. That's what you're shooting
you know,
for.
Right. That,
yeah.
That's what we ultimately want. What you really want to do is you want to take what you have.
Right.
And say to yourself, what do I want to work on this year?
Yeah. Okay.
You chose length of body and width. Okay. And
yeah.
So you're working on length of body and width. If that buck produces kids out of your does that are longer bodied and wider, he's done his job.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, right. Or even, yeah, yeah, totally.
No, and don't expect, and I a number of breeders will agree with me and have said it to me too, don't expect any one buck to do everything.
Right. Okay.
Okay. He may also give you a better medial suspensory ligament on your does. He may also yeah. give you better pliability of skin. But if you got a buck for length of body and width, don't expect him to fix everything else I just said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know?
And I'm also kind of considering not making decisions so quickly on which babies to keep, because I kind of want to see what they look like a little bit older and then make decisions later. That's the hard thing about the YouTube channel is people are like, oh, you said you were going to keep this goat. Well, now you have to keep her forever, else I'm going to kill myself. And I'm like, dang yeah. it. Well, that's hard to do. You know, like that escalated quickly. Like, yeah. I don't know.
You know, you get to a point though, you know, the way we look at it is we're at the point where it's not so much we're getting rid of them. We're sending them to another farm where they can grow and mature and blossom, possibly.
Yeah. For some people, it's exactly what they want. Yeah.
Exactly.
And it's like, why not make that situation for them, you know?
Right. John.
I mean, Nate sold me a kid last year who was by no means a cull, right? He would have kept her in his farm for a long time. But he knew that she'd be pretty okay over here. I'd take care of her very well, and she'd have a good chance at life. And so he sold her to me, and she got in the first ring this year in the show and got grand champion as a dry yearling. So I wouldn't look at it as, I want to wait and see what this one looks like. First of all, you'll be able to develop your eye, and you'll see a kid that's 10 days old and say, I don't like this about it, don't like this about it. Because there's a point, and usually it's at the 10-day mark, where a kid will unfold after being born, and that kid at 10 days, 9 days, depending on at least this is my feeling. I'm sure Nate has a different
Okay.
feeling. At 10 days old for me, when I look at my Oberhasli kid, I'm like, okay, that's pretty much what that's going to look like as a yearling and first freshman or whatever, you know, minus the udder. Because I know what my genetics do, so I know pretty well what they're going to look like. Now, I could be 100% wrong in some instances, and they can just mature and look awful or better, but
yeah,
most of the time, once you develop your eye, you can kind of catch a drift of what they're going to do.
I'd even say less than 10 days. As you start seeing, we refer to it as unfolding. You know, these little kid goats, they're kind of cramped right inside their mother before they're born.
Yeah, that's what he was saying. He was saying, once they unfold. Yeah.
And it's called unfolding because, like, it seems like that top line will suddenly, like, start popping down. You know, when the first day they're born, you're looking at it and you're kind of like, whoa, what did I do here? But then, you know, 5 days later, you're looking at him and you're like, wow, we're going to have fun with you.
Yeah.
So just keep doing what you're doing and develop your eye for sure.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I've made pretty good choices thus far. But yeah, I'd love to get a little bit better at that. I wonder if Crystal should make a video on that. It's like, because it's an eye thing. You really have to be looking for certain stuff. So
don't be afraid to sell them to a herd that you know will also care for them like you would care for them.
Yeah.
Because you're going to run out of room really quick.
Right.
If you don't. There's a fine art to finding homes for these that will take care of them and show them and help them mature.
Okay. Yeah.
So you have another question?
I think that's it. That's all my questions.
Okay. Oh my goodness.
Well,
oh, that was good.
I hope we answered those for your audience well enough.
Yeah, I learned a lot, yeah.
And if they have more questions, feel free to contact us. And
yeah, we're on the Instagrams and the Facebooks and all that.
Totally. For a new person like delving into this, I didn't even know you guys there was a podcast, and I was like, I was so excited. So I've been listening to you guys every day, actually. I've been going back and listening to old stuff and just trying to absorb like what you guys are talking about, but it's really interesting. It's exciting.
Well, I appreciate you listening. I know I think it was like this fall. You were asking about how people set up goats and I sent you some pictures and you're like, yes, teach me. And then actual human child hit the ground and I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I ran out of time.
But
I'm glad that you found the podcast, and in fact I might have sent it to you, I'm not sure.
You did. No, that was good. That was super helpful because I didn't even know it existed. But it is helpful for people that like it almost feels like your podcast is almost like how you were saying when you go to a show and you can talk with other people about all this goat stuff. It's like, it's like that. It's like, oh, it's that kind of same feeling where I can sit and listen to people talk about stuff on that level, you know?
Right.
And that was our goal.
And honestly, if you have any questions, even if you can't reach Nate or I, the great thing about the dairy goat community, especially the show community, but even just breeders in general, if you have questions, we're more than happy to answer them because we all love to talk about this passion that we all have, which is dairy goats. So it's a really cool community to be in. And I'm glad that we have another solid representative for dairy goats.
Thank you.
Thanks for showing all of these people that have been disconnected for probably too long how animals, livestock are really raised in the real world and not this rainbows and sprinkles and sparkles universe that some other content creators create. So you show the reality of farming and it's really admirable. So
thank you.
Yes.
I appreciate that.
Well, I think we've ran a little bit long. I'm sure you have chores to do for the night before it gets dark out.
Definitely.
So I think this will be a good spot to wrap up. Danelle, where can people find you?
So we have our Instagram account, Weed 'Em and Reap. Then we also have the YouTube channel, of course, where we post weekly videos now. And yeah, we're just showing our life, what we're doing, and the next adventure for our animals, whether it's, you know, the goats or the chickens or, you know, breedings and the bucks and stuff or whatever. Yeah. And we also have a pond and they're cooking from the garden and stuff. So that's fun too.
Yeah, it's really fun content. I like that you've gone to once a week, because now I don't feel bad if I miss a video. I'm like, I can totally that makes watch.
You're the first person to say you're glad about that. No, it's hard. As you guys know, it's hard to get together and put something out there and record it. You know, it takes a lot of effort. So it's nice to kind of not have to do it twice a week, but get to kind of have a bit of a break. And then I can actually focus on spending more time learning about stuff that I want to learn, like showing goats. So,
well, Danelle, thank you so much for joining us. Yeah. Nate, yes, always a pleasure for you to be on as well.
Always. Thank you.
Everybody, this has been Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast. We'll catch you on the next one. Ringside, an American Dairy Goat podcast, is not an affiliate of the American Dairy Goat Association. All opinions or information regarding the ADGA does not represent the registry.